Welcome to Ben Drury's Voice. I'm Ben. Join me as I chat with big thinkers, decision makers, and leaders in the world of tech. If you like the show and would like to hear more from us, give us a follow on your favorite streaming platform. Welcome to the show, guys. Today we're joined by Rocky Gupta from SeatGeek. It's so good to have you on the show with us today.
Yeah, likewise, Bill. Thanks so much for having me. This is so exciting.
Yeah. So we've got so many questions to get through, and I'm going to pick your brains on a lot of different topics. But I think just to get the ball rolling a bit before we get into the depths of the conversation, could you give us a bit of insight into SeatGeek and where you fit into the role of tech?
First, thanks so much for kind of putting it together. This was great, and I'm looking forward to talking through this. Recruiting is a passion of mine, so I love talking about it all the time. So it's good to actually send it to a broader audience for people who can relate, similar to me. To give you a little bit insight on SeatGeek, let's see. So I would say SeatGeek is a leading mobile-first ticketing platform. A lot of people actually might have used or heard of them. It lets people buy and sell tickets to their favorite events. But, the focus has been the secondary market. It's been around for about 11 years. But I remember, I remember SeatGeek about a couple of years ago when Justin Bieber made a tweet of, if you want to buy my concert tickets, go to SeatGeek or something like that. And that's when it really went viral. So I remember it from that time. And that was really, kind of what the consumer side brought for SeatGeek. But what's interesting about SeatGeek also is it's on the enterprise side of the business too. So about 2017, they acquired a company called TopTix for their ticketing solution, box office ticketing solution. And essentially what it does is it really just has now a lot of clients, and what they're trying to do is just give people a really kind of revision of how we do ticketing in the future. So a lot of it is around like B2B, 2C. So, here they're competing directly with companies like Ticketmaster, Live Nation, and of course, it's been an interesting time for all of these companies being in the ticketing space. But that said, it's interesting because both of these sides are pretty cool and make SeatGeek very, very unique and pretty fun.
Cool. Yeah, I'm just out of curiosity. How old is the company? How long has it been going for?
It's been around for 11 years, but I would say that I think once the brand and the marketing really kicked off, it wasn't until a couple of years ago. So I heard about it a couple of years ago. And in the US, it's very famous for being able to get really cool apps and cheaper prices. So that's why I went on it. But I think Justin Bieber and a bunch of celebrities, when they started tweeting about it, that's when it actually went viral, which is how I remember it, to be honest.
Yeah. Very powerful celebrities. It's always the way, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
So I'm interested in your role at SeatGeek. So, and kind of your career history up to this date. So could you give us a bit of background on that?
So my quick spiel on what I'm doing at SeatGeek. So I actually oversee all of tech recruiting there. So tech is product and engineering recruiting, which is overall kind of overseeing everything in New York, which is their main headquarters. But a lot of people don't know this. SeatGeek is a fairly global company. So especially after the acquisition of TopTix, we have a huge portion of it in Israel. So definitely there's a lot of hiring that happens in Israel, London, Copenhagen. So we're fairly global from that perspective, in addition to definitely hiring in the US.
Amazing. So it's tech recruiting. So, I've heard a lot about recruiting. I've worked for a recruitment firm before, very different style of recruitment. So what would you say the main differences between tech recruiting and other areas of recruitment?
There's definitely a lot, and I would even dive back. I just realized I didn't answer your question about my own career history.
Okay.
Because I think tech recruiting is something that no one really kind of falls into. I think when I was growing up, I didn't ever think I was going to be a tech recruiter. So my interesting story started off from a childhood. I had a very interesting childhood, moved between countries. So I, after kindergarten, my parents decided it was a great idea to kind of move back to India. India. So I actually went to India. I learned a new language there. I'm Indian, but for us, it was, you know, English was the first language. Then I moved back and learned Hindi. And then afterwards, I just remember growing up and being the most talkative child. So my mother used to play a game with me and my brother, and she was like, whoever stays quiet the longest wins the game. I always lost. So maybe I should have taken that as a cue growing up, but I wanted to be all sorts of things. Ultimately came back to the States in middle school and then, you know, kind of continued on my life here. But I think that gave me quite a lot of perspective of like different cultures, different, like just learning about different types of people and adapting very quickly because I just was always making new friends and moving around so much. So that said, you know, when I went to college, believe it or not, I was a tax accounting major.
Right. Okay.
My fourth year, I dropped out of accounting because I just really, you know, and funny, it wasn't that I was bad at it, shockingly, although I would have thought that. I just really felt the need to interact with people and human beings. I just loved that piece. So that's how recruiting really started. My first internship was a paid internship from college. It was just a credit internship. And you know, the second day on the job, they asked me to pick up the phone and talk to a candidate. And I was like, I don't know if I can do this. I'm very young. But and they were like, no, absolutely, you can do it. They empowered me. And yeah, it was very natural. And I was like, I think I can do this. So that's how really recruiting started. But I would say tech recruiting really came on my in my lap when, so Goldman Sachs was my first position when I was really learning about recruiting, more so focused on the investment banking side, the financial sector. But then Google was my first tech recruiting passion. Wow. And I think that's how it really started. So when I moved to Google, it was really fun because, you know, of course, everybody knows about Google, but I think they have an amazing tech culture and they just, you know, really recruiters are very much embedded in the system.
Yeah.
And working very closely with engineers. So I made a lot of friends there. I fell in love with tech recruiting. Since then onwards, my career has been tech recruiting. But yeah, I think that's where it really started. And now it's been almost a decade and I love it. But yeah, hopefully that answers your question in my long-winded way of my career. I think it's fun to kind of explain how you even fall into tech recruiting. So I figured I'd share that.
It is. It's really interesting. And I mean, everyone seems to have a very different story when they get into this kind of industry. So it's really interesting to hear how you kind of got into it. And you've been in it for so long now. So, and you were saying that you really enjoy communicating with people. Is that the main aspect that you like about it? Or is there anything else that keeps you involved?
Well, I fell in love with recruiting because I just like the career aspect, or like just the conversation aspect of it, the relationship aspect of it. But tech recruiting was interesting because I found it difficult. And, you know, I almost found tech recruiting to be very creative. So I just fell in love with, you know, how creative you have to be. I also started as a campus tech recruiter. So when you go to universities, there's a lot of ways to, there are thousands and thousands of companies that are looking for the same exact talent. How do you make yourself different? And that's something that I absolutely loved. And, you know, I personally enjoy, I'm a very data-driven person personally. So for me, tech was really fun from that perspective that I was working with very like-minded people. A lot of engineers are very tech-focused and very data-driven. So it was fun to kind of do that. I actually learned, I took Python 101 and basic SQL, didn't like it. So I knew I'm not a coder, but I did know for a fact that I like working with those folks and, you know, and that's how I think tech recruiting really was fun.
Amazing. That's really cool. So I'm just thinking now, like present day, like recruiting and onboarding is typically just so face to face. Like in the history of recruiting, it's always been meet the people, have a chat, you know, it's so face to face, the procedure. So obviously with lockdown and things like that and COVID, how has that changed? How have you adapted to work around that?
I mean, to be honest, I onboarded remotely. So SeatGeek was something that I just joined very recently. So it was a very interesting time because, you know, I would probably say that it was just like very, you know, for me, onboarding was actually better than what I had imagined it to be, being in the space. But that said, I think onboarding is challenging. So a lot of companies are thinking about creative ways, again, of like how we can actually provide the best candidate experience. So a lot of it even starts with, you know, even though people can't come into the office, bringing the office closer to them. So I think a huge involvement recently where I had an amazing experience at SeatGeek Lockheed was they were able to create this like really nice presentation. This is what the office looks like. Just bring you a little bit closer. I'm like, okay, so in a year from now, whenever I get there, I'll be able to see that. And I was able to share that with candidates. So that was really nice. But in general, you know, from a creativity perspective, I think, you know, really coming up with cool ways with marketing to provide the best candidate experience and getting people closer to, you know, to the office, even though they're not physically closer, is important. So a lot of things around that are also campus university, you know, visits and just being able to go on site and actually meet with candidates at career fairs. That whole dynamic has changed. So how do we still keep the morale up and keep candidates engaged and keep them affiliated with our brand is another thought process that we've been actually thinking about quite a bit. But that said, I think there are a lot of things that go into like, you know, just adapting to it. I think ultimately it just comes down to going with the flow, making sure that everybody understands that, you know, we're here to, and empathy. I think empathy is huge, right? Right now, morales are just down across the country and especially in campus students. So if you're going to campuses, you know, or not rather going, but meeting candidates from campuses online via Zoom, just being able to have, you know, empathy and connect with them on a much more personal level, I think has really helped bring that kind of culture. It really shows the kind of person you are and the kind of people that you work with.
Yeah, and that's interesting because you have to kind of, if you're speaking to people remotely about joining the business, then you have to kind of somehow instill what the culture is like in the business. I mean, how do you kind of put that across? Because that's quite a big part of joining a new business.
Culture is means so many different things for so many organizations, right? Like culture is like sometimes values. Culture is actually ever developing. Culture is different in different locations. So when I think about culture, I think, you know, for me, what has been huge at most companies that I've worked at and definitely at SeatGeek, probably to another level, has been really transparency. So I just really enjoy the transparent culture, and people want transparency. Right now, given the current environment, people really appreciate that. So, you know, just showing them, okay, you know what, on a weekly basis, this is what we do. We actually do all hands on a weekly basis, or, you know, this is, you know, what our OKRs are. This is, you know, setting metrics and talking about them publicly. Those are things that I think are very valuable. They show culture, but they also show the kind of people that work there. And I think ultimately it's the people, right? The people are the ones who build that culture. So being able to kind of attract and retain that type of talent that is good for the company is really the essence, I think, in a way of the culture, because it's really the people.
Definitely. I'm just interested because obviously you're speaking to a lot of candidates right now, and I'm just interested in kind of what you seem to think that people prefer now. What are kind of people saying? Are they saying they prefer to work at home all the time, or they would love to be in the office full time, but for now at home? Or is it a mixture? I mean, just trying to, have you got like the feel of what people are kind of preferring?
I think that's a great question. And this is evolving as we go, right? I think some people I still hear, I would love to be in the office. I love being around people. I know for me, I love being around people. So for me, I like that. But I'm actually also enjoying the fact that I can be at home. I can, you know, kind of, you know, not have to all the time be on the road, taking those trains, especially with COVID. So I'm seeing a lot, you know, I'm seeing a mix of a lot, but I'm definitely seeing the other side on the tech, you know, especially with a lot of big tech companies, as you might have heard, like the Googles and Facebooks are of the world. They're saying that people might be coming for a work or like a flex schedule for the remainder of next year, or probably permanently. So if, you know, tech companies are going permanently remote, I don't know how that affects the culture from a big portion of it. But in addition to that, I think a lot of candidates are now asking for that as well from startups. We haven't really come to a stance. We know we're definitely not open until April 2021. But that being said, you know, this definitely might be pushed back even further. I think employee safety is like the number one thing that it's on top of everybody's mind. And I would imagine in a world we would be more flexible with more remote employees and just having that flex work. Just hasn't been worked out yet, but I'm definitely seeing a trend where people are asking for flexibility because a lot of people have moved outside of the city. a lot of tech companies are in the city, and now people are moving to places that are maybe hour, 2 hour long commute. People are getting houses. We've seen a huge trend in that in the US. And because of that, a lot of people don't want to spend that 2 hours, 3 hours commuting anymore. So it makes sense. I personally think it makes sense to be able to have like a 2 or 3 day per week type of a work schedule. But I think it really depends on companies.
Yeah, and it's just all it can be is companies have to just be flexible at the end of the day.
And I think, you know, this is a great opportunity for tech. It's, you know, one thing that I have to say across the board, if you look at tech organizations, they have been successful. One thing that's been going well is they've been able to stay afloat and be successful and be able to get work done remotely. So when you can see that trend, then why not, you know, provide that flexibility to top talent? And also from a diversity perspective, I can put a plug there. I think it really opens the horizon for folks that are not just focused in New York, right? We've made so much emphasis on recruiting of like people in like the tech sector, for example, the Bay Area, New York, maybe Austin. Now we can actually open the horizon and look for talent that is equally capable, if not brilliant, and you know, be able to bring that into the company. And that really, you know, can help us when we're thinking about, you know, D&I initiatives as an organization. And those things I think recruiters are already really jumping on, especially startups, as they're just hiring more remote staff across the globe.
So I'm just thinking now about how you build a team internally. So how do you do that? And then how do you also ensure diversity with your recruitment?
I don't think the, you know, pandemic affected diversity and inclusion goals per se, you know, for a company. But there, you know, first and foremost, when I think about it, I think it's a lot of time and investment, right? Being able to invest time and resources is the best way to ensure diversity. The way I've actually thought about it, and lots of companies, you know, they try to get diverse talent through you know, posting jobs on diverse, you know, job boards, things like Jobwell, things like Power to Fly. You know, those are some great areas to actually post your jobs, to actually, you know, attract some of that talent. But, you know, if I even take a step back and talk about diversity, I think there's two types of diversity in tech, which is important to highlight, right? There's women in tech, and then there is racial diversity in tech. So it's important to kind of have that distinction and realize where we want to move needle. The truth is, in tech recruiting or just any tech companies at the moment, we need to move a needle everywhere. Diversity and inclusion is top of mind for every organization. There is no cookie cutter approach for it. But that being said, it is just such an important piece of it that a lot of companies are using, you know, these types of websites to post their job boards. I would go even a step further, Bill, and probably say that, you know, in order to build diversity and have that inclusion, we should probably invest more time in universities, building the pipeline sooner and earlier on. So looking at HBCUs, you know, looking at apprentice program, investing time there. And even as early as high school programs, I've actually spent some time building high school programs where, you know, we were able to attract and engage with talent very early on before they even graduated college. And that really helped them, you know, because I don't know if you've seen this statistics, and this might actually be outdated because I was in campus recruiting at the time when I heard that. But majority of women actually drop out or decide they will not take computer science as a major in university before they even start university. So that dropout rate was very, very interesting. And that's why when we were doing something like a high school program, part of it was just educating and engaging people with the tech community and showing how exciting that is. So there are a lot of different ways of like being able to find this talent. But I've noticed that it's a bit easier, especially given the competition that we're dealing with on actually like front loading and hiring a lot of junior diverse talent, because if you can retain them, that can actually be, you know, it'll be better from like a spending time perspective. But yeah, I think that definitely, you know, is a good thing for this site, you know, this type of a workplace. But that's another thing is, you know, right now it's again, as I mentioned, it is the morale for many people, and especially junior and campuses have been very, very affected. So the response rate and attendance has been extremely, extremely low. So there definitely needs to be a bigger strategy that, you know, tech in general needs to come up with in order to engage with this talent and be able to get them on board. But I like early on in the career as opposed to senior.
Yeah, definitely. And I've had this conversation with a few people, and it is there is, especially in the UK now, there is this drop off with engagement with females going into the tech industry. And I'm not sure if it's the same in America, but in the UK, it kind of happens just before A-levels. I don't know if you have A-levels in America, I'm sorry.
What are A-levels? I'm curious. A-levels.
I think it's probably, they're the ones before university.
Oh, interesting. Is it like high school maybe?
It's at the end.
Call them high schools between 9th grade and 12th grade.
So. Yeah, that's it. That's the one.
Okay, oh, perfect. Yeah.
Oh, no, it's year 11, 12, and 13.
Oh, there's year 13. Okay, so I don't. So typically there's like up till 1st grade to 12th, but between 9th grade to 12th, that's high school program. So what I was alluding to earlier, you know, that's where I think we can also engage with some of that women talent. And that's exactly what I was talking about earlier of women are dropping off. So yes, exactly. That was a statistics probably from a while ago from what I heard back in my campus recruiting days of like, that's why we ended up building that high school program. But that being said, yes, that is very, very interesting. And I guess it is across both countries, right? Because we are losing a lot of that strong talent and women who could be brilliant. But, you know, there's a lot of stigmas, right? There's a bro culture and we don't even want to get into that. But, you know, if we go into, you know, that side of the world, it's actually true. It turns a lot of women out, you know, off of, you know, just tech in general or programming. And a lot of them actually end up doing a lot of things that are more like product management focus or like technical, but not so technical. So they're not coding day in and day out. So how do we engage with that talent is something that's definitely top of mind. And another thing, kind of going back to the diversity and inclusion thing of what I found successful, and I know this is super controversial, is but having metrics of for your team to motivate them on how we can be intentful about D&I hiring within the organization. A lot of people are very afraid to put metrics, but I've seen companies that are most successful when they have those metrics on a quarterly basis, yearly basis, for their recruiting teams to be able to execute on that strategy. And yes, we may not be able to meet that, but I think it really puts things into perspective and really shows what we are able to accomplish in a, you know, a very competitive market.
Mm. Do you think that we're on a tipping point where this is going to change quite soon, or do you think there's still a long way to go?
Personally, I feel like it's a long way to go. You know, there is no cookie cutter approach, as I mentioned, when we think about diversity and inclusion. I think there's so much that the tech industry still needs to do. I think, you know, from a, you know, pay perspective, I think it's been extremely competitive and it is lucrative. But that motivation or that initial, like, getting people engaged with, you know, tech, not just as a, you know, white male, but as a person of color, as a, you know, as a woman, you know, those things I'm very passionate about. I can tell you a lot of recruiters are very, very passionate about the space. And, you know, if we had figured it out, I don't think any company has figured it out at the moment. We're all trying, but trying is the best way to do it, right? I think trying and having tactical approaches, having creative approaches, we might fail, but it's important to try. That said, you know, I think definitely some way to go.
Yeah, and it's important to talk about it like we're doing right now. So, you know, put the word out there, make it a comfortable topic to talk about. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm just thinking about the industry. So, I mean, in your opinion, do you think there's any skills in the tech recruitment industry that are undervalued?
I would probably say building relationships, so important for a tech recruiter or any recruiter in general. But I think throughout what it's been happening in the tech recruiting community is it's getting very well connected. So by when I say connections and relationships, I mean connections within the tech recruiting area and the community. but also with engineers and companies, because sometimes if you're just so focused on you know, being heads down and focusing on butts in seats, it really doesn't help you throughout your career. For example, in the tech recruiting community, I'm struggling with a very difficult one-off role that I have no clue how to get started. And sometimes we just are like, oh, I don't know how to figure it out. But the best way to do it is tap into your network and learn from others of how you can do things a different way. So I think, you know, that's definitely undervalued, and we don't spend a lot of time building that relationship to continue that relationship over the years. So I think, you know, that is very helpful. Also, engineering, you're working with engineers so much. That is such a great opportunity to have relationships with people that are different from you, but also learn from their network, learn from their community, learn from them, follow those leaders. I actually spend quite a lot of time doing that to continue those relationships. You never know when you need someone. So I think, you know, for me, you know, building relationships has been definitely crucial.
Obviously, you're working with the tech industry and a lot of people who are working in the tech industry. And as we all know, the tech industry, if I say tech industry one more time.
That's fair. We talk about tech. I think tech is definitely, you know, maybe we just call it a community or, yeah, you know, yeah, something. We'll come up with creative.
Okay. So working in the industry, you have to, obviously it's moving really quick and change is happening all the time. And a part of your role, I imagine, would be to have your fingers on the pulse of everything that's going on so you can stay well informed. So is there any resources that you rely on that keep you like ahead of the game and keep you very firmly in touch with all the changes that are happening?
I would probably say, I've joined a lot of, you know, over the years. I mean, there are some like recruiter specific Slack channels that you can join. I've joined a lot of meetups of tech recruiting professionals, so we can actually just connect. And, you know, we used to do that. I don't know. We haven't done that in a while. I would say it's been almost a year. I haven't gone to one meetup, but life has changed over the past 9 months. So I guess I don't know too much about that. But listening to other recruiting leaders in general, I have followed people on LinkedIn, followed people on Twitter. That's really helped me kind of keep close with that tab or keeping close with that connection. But of course, the popular things, right, where you can get that tech intel. So, I mean, Blind, again, I think it's more so like compensation heavy. You probably have heard of Team Blind. So I've found some useful information there. But things like TechCrunch, things like Built in New York City, you know, these are all super resourceful websites where you can really understand, you know, what is going on in the industry. And it was very helpful, especially with like the recent layoffs. It gave us a good understanding of, you know, how we can help out people in that, you know, community who are getting laid off, right? Unfortunately, you know, this pandemic has affected a lot of roles, a lot of unemployment across the globe, especially in the US right now. But being able to just hear about them beforehand when there are layoffs happening in other organizations, we were able to actually particularly source for them or find talent and really just go after them to help out people who, you know, it was just a very unfortunate situation for.
In the ticket and event industry, I mean, is it still, I mean, events aren't happening right now, but is it still growing? Is SeatGeek still growing right now?
Yeah, I mean, SeatGeek is growing so aggressively. And, you know, it is, SeatGeek has a very interesting story, right? You know, right now, I would say that, you know, the company has been, It's interesting, right? So definitely ticketing industry, live events were on pause. So it definitely affected SeatGeek in, you know, the worst possible situation. But what really helped was that the investors still continued to believe in the organization. What also helped was we were very well funded. And prior to the pandemic, they actually had their best quarter and they've been growing 60% year over year prior to that. So that was really, really nice and strong. So because of that, I think they were just in a better place to weather the storm. So even though it affected them initially, you know, now, you know, we're already starting to see some revenue come in. We actually, from what I heard, SeatGeek was actually also planning on going public at one point prior to COVID. Now that's changed a little bit, but that being said, said, I think that is still our ultimate goal, and we want to get there. And now that we're seeing already an uptick on the revenue, we're already seeing that, 2021, a lot of live events are coming back. We're feeling optimistic about that. But, the biggest thing for me is a lot of people don't know this, but the competitors are not doing so well. So competitors like StubHub, Ticketmaster, I think they were on the news yesterday. There's a lot going on there. Because they're not able to brave that storm, SeatGeek actually has a very good advantage to get more of that market share. So they're much better prepared post-COVID. So because of that, the hiring is extremely aggressive. We're actually, rewiring a lot of things and going back and trying to find, people who can help us with some of the legacy work that has been happening. And now that we don't have to generate a lot of revenue in COVID, it actually helps us kind of like rethink some of the work that has been going on. So from that perspective, I would say, there is an interesting story. And we are hiring aggressively, but I think this is going to be the future for SeatGeek. And it's nice to know that we don't have to worry about things for the next couple of years and things are going to be okay. I'm going to be optimistic. Again, with the pandemic, no one knows what's going to happen. But from what I've heard overall and the vision, it's looking positive.
Excellent. Is there anything any changes that you've made in the business during the pandemic that you actually think is great and you're going to take forward into the future? Like we were talking before about remote working and being flexible. Is there anything else that you've noticed pop up that you think this is great, we'll carry on doing it this way?
Yeah, definitely. I think, two things that come to mind are definitely, as recruiters, I think, and I think it also kind of alludes back to your question of like, what are some of the skills that are undervalued a bit? Having that data-driven approach when you are approaching, recruiting in general at an organization, and the employer brand piece. I think those are two very, very important areas that I would love for, SeatGeek or just any other company. I think like those are things that I've actually thought about quite a bit. And for recruiters, I think what makes them so useful and so good at their roles is not just building relationships, but I think part of it is having that data-driven approach to actually look at because engineers are very data-driven. So being able to present that data, figuring out bottlenecks sooner rather than later, operationalizing a lot of the churn and burn, because a lot of roles are not one-off specific in engineering. Some of them are like, okay, we want 50 of similar generalist engineers who can work on different parts of the business, right? So how do we actually scale that and operationalize it is something that recruiters should like really keep in mind. And, I've really had that data-driven approach here at SeatGeek. I think there's definitely a lot of work to be done. Data from building it internally for our teams as well as for the business is something that I'm focusing on. But along with that, employer branding. I can't, over my years, I've noticed that marketing really takes the reins on it. And, someone from marketing really leads the charge. And I think recruiting can do that's a huge area for recruiting to really dive into. Being able to work on employer brand, because at the end of the day, we are talking to candidates. We actually have a very good idea of, what's working and what's not working. And yes, there's a lot of things such as employer brand, but there's a lot of things around marketing. So there's definitely employer brand, but there's also marketing for the company. So marketing can actually be broken down in many different areas. And I think employer brand is specifically where recruiting should be very, very involved. And I think that really helps. And it's something that I'm, actively working on as well.
Cool. Amazing advice. So you said you've been in the industry for 11 years now, did you say?
No, about a decade. I actually finished undergrad in about almost 3 years. So because of that, I'd probably say about a decade.
Okay. So if you think back to when you first started in the industry, is there anything that you wish you were told when you started that you've had to go on and learn the hard way?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. I can tell you so many. But the one that comes to mind that I've learned so much about is networking. I really underestimated networking and keeping those. And that's why I say building relationships is so important. Networking is a huge advantage for us recruiters, because we are spending time with these people. We're spending time in the tech community with other recruiters, with events, with, students, with, with so many people. So I think, networking and keeping in touch with folks is something that I didn't really do early on in my career. And I do regret that quite a bit. Now I'm doing a much better actively, you know, focusing on that. But earlier in my career, I think that was definitely an opportunity that I missed where I did not network. And, you know, it's a shame, but I think I definitely learned through that. And I think it's really been a learning lesson, which I now, when I have, you know, junior employees or my team, you know, I always share this because I've learned from it. And, you know, wish I did it the other way around. But you know what? Honestly, I think it was definitely a lesson learned. And now I can share it with others.
Absolutely. I think maybe just to kind of finish, wrap things up, have you got three words of wisdom, only three words of wisdom for someone that's starting the industry as advice?
Ooh, words of wisdom. I think, you know, definitely be right now, especially given COVID, I would probably say have a very empathetic mindset when talking to people. Do market research. Definitely focus a lot on, you know, really understanding what the profile is and what people are looking for. And at the end of the day, honesty. Recruiting has become so, you know, candidates really appreciate the transparency. So being honest and really understanding what motivates people and pushing people on it and not being shy about it is something that recruiters can constantly, you know, improve on. And I think, you know, that really just goes into, you know, understanding candidates' motivation. So if I had to think about from a, you know, closing perspective, focusing on that aspect of, like, you know, the getting the motivation to have a better candidate experience and making sure it's the right candidate that we want to hire for an organization. And market data research when we're really thinking about sourcing, which is earlier on in the funnel of, like, finding what is the profile that the company is looking for. And then relationships, really making sure you're, you know, having that empathetic mindset right now in COVID and making sure that being able to keep in touch with folks and, you know, just talk to them and being personally connected, I think really does go a long way.
Definitely. I said that was the last question, but I've just got another one whilst we've got you here, if you don't mind sharing, is there anything that you think you do differently to other people in similar roles that you think works really, really well? If you don't mind sharing that piece of advice for the listeners.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say, because I don't know what other folks use, so it would be a little bit, you know, too strong to say that, you know, I do something that others don't. But I think one thing that has really helped me, you know, from a perspective of being able to close and, you know, being able to reach some of these really strong D&I goals. I mean, for example, in my previous company, I brought data science as a vertical to 50-50 gender diversity, which was huge. And I think the reason why I was able to do that was I was very intentful of what we wanted to do. And part of it kind of goes back to setting metrics. I set metrics for myself all the time. Setting metrics is not just for your team. It is really important. First and foremost, you can be a leader, but you are still an individual contributor as a recruiter. So for me, I've never thought anything different of that. And at heart, I'm a recruiter. So for me, setting metrics has been one of the biggest things, whether it was setting metrics on sourcing numbers, setting metrics on actually, you know, hiring diverse talent. All of that was very, very crucial. And I think that really helped me hit my targets and also be a leader, right? You know, it's all about be a leader of folks who, or rather, you know, lead by example. That's what I was going with. But I think, you know, leading by example is just so crucial in this space. So being able to do that has definitely helped me quite a bit.
Amazing. It sounds like you're doing some absolutely excellent work. It's great to see. And thanks so much for sharing all this incredible advice with us today.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope, you know, this was helpful for folks. And, you know, definitely I'm, you know, also I'll put a little plug in there. We're building our own tech recruiting team. So if there are other technical recruiters who are looking for positions, definitely reach out to me on LinkedIn. I don't know where people are hearing this, but that said, definitely available to kind of have conversations. And I just love connecting with people in the industry. So if there are folks across the globe who just want to connect on recruiting and some of the challenges, this is something I love to do. And I could really use that a little bit in this pandemic, right? Let's connect with humans and have that interaction. So there you have it. If you're looking for a tech recruiting position, or if you are just want to talk about the struggles in the industry, I'm all ears.
Excellent. Thanks so much for coming on the show and joining us today. It's been excellent. You've shared so much amazing advice, which I'm sure all the listeners will appreciate so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Bill, thank you so much for having me. This is super fun.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show, give us a follow on your favorite streaming platform.